We're wrapping up Rabbeinu Gershom and then starting on Rashi. We will not wrap up Rashi today, that's for sure. This is all part of moving forward in terms of history, and specifically among the Ashkenazim before we turn around and go to the Sephardim. So we talked a lot about Rabbeinu Gershom. I'm not going to review all that we've done, but we were looking at some of his enactments. And the last one I wanted to talk about was the one about reminding Anusim of their past. Meaning, I forget exactly the language that the Be'er HaGolah used that I brought on the sheet last week, but you're not allowed to remind somebody who pretended to convert to Christianity in order to avoid getting killed. You're not allowed to remind them of the fact that they did that. In other words, they left. They, did whatever it was that they did, at least publicly. Now they say, I want to do tshuva, I want to come back. Perhaps the situation has changed, there's no more persecution. Perhaps they just said, I don't want to do that anymore. So you're not allowed to remind them of whatever it was that they did during that period of time. Clear? So the first thing you have to ask is, why did you need to say that? Right?
Right.
Like, why, it's sort of like the decree against, reading someone else's mail. By the way, I did edit that piece out of the recording last week. Don't say anything, because I don't want to have to edit that comment out again. This should be obvious that you shouldn't remind people. I mean, somebody was facing potential torture, death, whatever, and they made this decision. Whether you agree with them on the decision or not, take a look at the Gemara in source number one. This is the classic source regarding the issue of ona'as devarim. The term ona'ah is a term that the Torah uses for a variety of crimes against other people involving using your strength to harm somebody else. The term ona'ah is subject to some debate in terms of the etymology, but I think the etymology of it is from the word aven, aleph, vav, nun, or on, as you see it sometimes, which is strength. You're not allowed to use your strength against somebody else. So ona'as mamon refers to doing that financially, finding a way to charge somebody much more than what something is worth, that kind of thing. But there's also ona'as devarim, which is using your strength against somebody else verbally. The best English translation I know of for ona'as devarim is verbal abuse. And if you take a look at source number one, the Torah says, it's actually this week's Parsha. So now you get two Parsha Divrei Torah. How do you like that? Velo sonu ish es amiso. You shall not use your strength against others. You shall not abuse others. Bo'na'as devarim. That is talking about ona'a with words, verbal abuse. Haketzad. Give me an example. Our case. Imhaya bal tshuva, somebody repents. Al yomar lo zchor masecha harishonim. You can't say to them, remember what you used to do. Somebody descended from people who converted to Judaism, you're not allowed to say, hey, remember that, you walk past a church or whatever it is and say, your father used to go, or father still goes there for all I know. Im haya ger, this person himself converts. Uba lo motara, al yomar lo pesha acham, nevelo sutrefo, shkatsumura masim, ba lo motara, shenemar epia gavur. If this person personally converted, you can't say, you used to eat treif, you used to go to McDonald's, now look, you're here learning Torah, like you think that what you're saying is a nice thing.
Right.
You feel like, well, I'm complimenting this person, but to them, it's a reminder of what they did that they don't feel good about. So you can't do that. And then the last example they give here, imhay yisurin ban alav, if a person is suffering, imhay yuchaloin ban alav, someone is ill, oshe mekaber es banav, rachman alitzan, a person loses their children, al yomar lo kederach shomer lo chavarov le'iov, you can't say what Iov's visitors said to him, where they said to him, halo yirascha kis lasecha, tikvascha vesom durachecha, zechor na mihuna ki avad. Where they say to him, there's some debate as to how to translate the line. I'll go with the translation that I chose here. Your reverence, the fact that you have Yiras Hashem, is your confidence. Tikvascha v'som derachecha, it is your hope, the end of your path. Zechor na mihuna ki avad, who is innocent and is destroyed. Meaning, if you're suffering, if you're being destroyed, it must be because you did something wrong. That's what they say to Iov. And after all, you are somebody who reveres Hashem. You are somebody of Yira. So this should be your belief. You should believe that you must have done something to deserve this. So the Gemara says, you're not allowed to say that to somebody. Chas v'shalom, to say to somebody who's suffering, you know, this is from God. You know, they can say that to themselves, that's fine. It's not for you to say that to them. This is anas devarim. So now, with all of that in mind, why does Rabbeinu Gershom need to make a decree, don't remind Anusim of what they did?
Specifically Anusim.
Yeah, specifically Anusim. It was happening. I mean,
people think they're not true.
Coming up.
Right, I mean,
right. There was a tragedy from it. Maybe it was
could be
a very big deal in the community.
So it definitely was a big deal in the communities. I mean, this is before the events that people usually think of. This is pre-Crusades. Crusades of 1096. Rabbeinu Gershom isn't alive anymore at that point. This is well before the Inquisition. But yes, this was something that was happening in Germany at the time. As a matter of fact, I think Rabbeinu Gershom's son was actually in this position. He had a son who was forced into this. The reality is that as much as they should have welcomed people back, it did not go easily. There was a practice. There was a ritual for coming back. There was a whole thing, going to mikvah. Like, there was a whole procedure for it.
I mean, it's not the same story as, like, Russian Jewry and, like, all the African communities that come to Eretz Yisrael. Like, a lot of people don't hold of their, like, lineage or whatever.
So that's interesting. Would someone have challenged their lineage? I would think not, just because this was all usually, I think, within the same generation. It wasn't like previous generations, you know, did whatever they did, and now you're somebody coming back. It's not like the crypto Jews, you know, that you know, where you hear somebody from Portugal or Mexico or whatever who says, you know, my ancestors used to go into the basement and light candles on Friday night. Yeah, you know, stories like that. So I think that there are a few reasons why this was a problem, why he had to say this. Number one, because there were people who actually gave up their lives. Like, you know, you're talking to people who had relatives who actually got killed over this, or were expelled and lost their homes and their parnassa and so on. So there's a lot of resentment. Like, my family suffered in this way and you avoided it. So I think that just on a personal level, people had difficulty. That's number one. Number two, when you look in Tanakh, Tanakh really promotes people giving up their lives rather than do this, right? You open up Sefer Daniel, which we learned however many years ago, and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah go into a furnace rather than bow to the statue. Daniel gets thrown to the lions for the crime of davening. So obviously they make it, but Tanakh is giving us a vision of death al kiddush Hashem, saying that that's right. The norm. Like, that's what, you know, that's what one ought to do. Not to mention, we have a halacha, right? Yehar gval yavor. There are certain averos for which we say, yes, better to be killed rather than violate them, and avodah zarah is on the list. So people could self-righteously say what they did was wrong. Someone should say something. So there's that. But another layer to this is the nature of Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz was, and I say Ashkenaz, I mean, you know, those Jews in basically France, Germany, that community in that time, were very strong on this idea of giving up one's life. I'm sorry, yeah, giving up one's life rather than given to Avodah Zarah. Whereas the Rambam wrote a letter to the Jews in Morocco when they were forced under the Almohads to declare acceptance of Mohammed, saying that they should continue to do mitzvos. It's, you know, get out of the country as fast as you can, but you should continue to do mitzvos. Hashem still loves you and all of that, because, you know, he insisted that's what, you know, that is the model they should be following. And that was followed in Spain, you know, as Sfardim. In Ashkenaz, you have a very different trend. In Ashkenaz, the trend is give up their lives. That was what they did. Where it starts, I'm not sure, because Rabbeinu Gershom is the very beginning of Ashkenaz. It isn't even called Ashkenazi Judaism at that stage. I just want to show you one source. If you take a look at source number two, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who is later than Rabbeinu Gershom. I would love to say we're going to get to him. I'm not so sure that's going to happen at this point. But Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is incredible. So Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, you're talking about, I think, 12th century. Yeah, he is that early. I remember the first time I noticed that, and I thought that was funny also, that he's that early. But yeah, I believe he's late 12th century.
Oh, no.
He's not, when he says chassid here, don't think chassid it is.
No, I know that, but I'm saying what people do, it sounds like a new one.
Yeah, no, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is early, early Ashkenaz. Yeah. So he writes, and this is like very difficult to really absorb, but he says, Yesh shenerag al kiddush Hashem. He says, some people are killed to honor Hashem's name. V'yesh tzadikim she'ein neharagin. And on the other hand, there are righteous people who don't get killed. Ela meisim bidei shemayim l'mitaseihem. They die at Hashem's hand of old age on their beds. V'ilu hayu b'sha'as hashmad hayu neharagin. If they had experienced these attempts to assimilate Jews, they would have been killed. That's what would have happened. V'lama yafsidu. He says, why should they lose out? They end up dying on their beds instead of having the chance to be martyred. Ela shepochsin lahem min haschar k'neged tovas hanah shechafetzim shalo lavo lidei kach k'dei sheyichyu v'yolidu banim. He says, their reward for whatever good things they did in their lifetime is reduced by the benefit that they received in fulfillment of their desire not to get into such a situation. In other words, since they didn't want to die al kiddush Hashem, so therefore they get less reward in life for the good that they did because they're happy that they didn't have to give up their lives. That reduces their schar. On the other hand, he says, va'osam haneharagim od f'malayim schar k'neged hanos ha'olam hazeh shelo kiblu. Those who got killed, they receive greater reward for what they missed out on in this world. This is not even his strongest statement, but it's a model of people should want to be in that situation in order to give up their lives. So that's the mentality in Ashkenaz. And that's why Rabbeinu Gershom needs to make a statement of, if people didn't, exactly, don't condemn them for it, don't remind them of it.
So why did the Sephardi convert and the Ashkenazi did not?
So my understanding is that a lot of it traces to the fact that the Rambam said to them, your mitzvos are still valuable. You haven't lost mm-hmm. your connection to Hashem because of this. Now the truth is, and this is important to note, the Rambam is dealing with Islam as opposed to Christianity. That's what you're going to say, Hannah? Yeah. The Rambam is dealing with a different world. Meaning Islam, for a Jew to say what they were supposed to say in Morocco, what the Almohads wanted them to say, which was that that the Quran is true, and that that's short. There's a full sentence they had to say. They had to say that that the Quran is true and that Muhammad was the last prophet. So while Judaism obviously thinks both statements are false, it's not Avodah Zarah to make a statement like that. You're not in a position of a Jew who accepts the Trinity. That's a whole different ballgame. That's Avodah Zarah. Whether it's Avodah Zarah for non-Jews is a whole discussion. But for Jews, it's definitely Avodah Zarah. So so it isn't so clear that the Rambam would have, made the same statement to Jews living in Christian Spain.
Someone did, I don't know if it was the Rambam, said that the Muslims have one God, and Christians have multiple gods. And the main thing you can't be over is believing in multiple gods. And because they believe in one God, the Muslims, then you're allowed to convert if you were going to die.
So, it gets a little more complicated than this, meaning the Rambam wants the Jews who are facing this to get out of Morocco. He does not want them to stay that way. He says, if you have to abandon all of your wealth and whatever you have, doesn't matter. If you have an option for getting out of Morocco, get out of Morocco. It's not a good thing. But it becomes an influence on Sephardi Jewry that Ashkenaz does not follow. Not that Ashkenaz was unaware of the Rambam. Ashkenaz is very aware of the Rambam. There's a lot of back and forth at that point, and the Rambam is accepted. Nonetheless, Ashkenaz has this tradition of Kiddush Hashem. That's the way they looked at it. And I'll show you source number 3. This is after Rabbeinu Gershom's time. This is in Rashi's day. There was some kind of a fight between families in a Jewish community. I know, you're shocked. You can't believe it. But apparently at some point historically it happened. And the case came to Rabbeinu Shlomo, Rashi, because of something that happened. I'll read out my English translation. The families were quarreling with scorn and insults. The community heard them and decreed they not accustom themselves to do this. There was some kind of a communal decree. You know, you guys have to stop fighting. One of them jumped up and swore that his family would not accept the decree. They did not cease their scorn. They kept right on going. What this looked like clearly was something public, but beyond that I don't know. The other jumped up and reminded him that he had assimilated during the time of Shmad. Remember what your family did. Another arose and said, you can't mention that. It's been decreed. Without mentioning who had issued the decree. He just said there is such a decree. And Rashi in his Tshuva says it is now known that Rabbeinu Gershom decreed that one who mentions such a thing should be excommunicated. Rabbeinu Gershom said you're not allowed to do that. So Rashi quotes Rabbeinu Gershom on this Gezerah, or Takana, whatever you want to call this. But at the same time, this tells you this was still going on. This was an issue. And it was an issue in Spain as well. The Rivash, who's writing, I think, in 14th century Spain, has a discussion about whether you can accept people who had gone through this and then come back. Can you accept them as edim, as witnesses? He doesn't cite Rabbeinu Gershom. I mean, again, he's in Spain. But this was a very big and very real issue for Jewish communities for centuries and centuries.
Was there tension because there's like such a stark contrast? Like, did you find people would actually try to move, you know, from Sfardi to, like, from Ashkenaz to Sfard just to get, was that easy to do? Like,
that's interesting. I have not heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
There were Jews who went from one to the other when conditions were better in other places. The Rush, who I've mentioned before, flees Germany to Spain because it's better to be in Spain in the beginning of the 14th century. So there were periods when it was better in one place or better in another. But I don't know of anybody fleeing because of communal attitudes on this issue. That's an interesting question, but I don't know anything about it.
The Rush is known as Sephardi?
So the Rush is known as both. Mm-hmm. Yes. The Rush is the king of all of this in so many different ways.
Because
the Rush is incredible.
He knew both.
And he influenced both. The Rush is fascinating. Oh, yeah. Hardcore Ashkenaz. He learned from the Balei HaTosfos. Yeah. The Rush is, Ramban also learned from Balei HaTosfos. But yes, no, the Rush is solid Ashkenaz, but Germany is not the place to be at the end of the 13th century. The Mordechai was killed. He had to get out. And so he goes to Spain, he goes to Cordoba, and he becomes Major Rav in Cordoba. Okay. So that's Rabbeinu Gershom. Clear? Good? Okay. So let's talk Rashi.